scriptures and put them together, we can draw good conclusions about many matters apart from God with dealing with Him in a spiritual way. So this isn't a spiritual issue, it's just an interesting issue in regard to the patriarchs. Being physical beings, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had to earn a living somehow. But so we want to address, how did they earn a living? What did they do to keep a roof over their head, or in this case, a tent over their heads? The prevailing view is that they were shepherds, and the reason is because they lived in tents and they were in a sense moving around. They were nomadic. They didn't stay in the same place all the time. They were temporary residents. They moved around the area of the Promised Land. But so they did have cattle. They did have herds. They did have those cattle and sheep and goats. But was that their primary occupation? You know, we already talked about the fact that they came up to the yet Christ and the two angels come up, and what did they do? Hey, let's have lunch, and they kill the fatted calf, which probably took a while, so they weren't in any big hurry, apparently. And so they cooked up the fatted calf, and they enjoyed a meal together. So, you know, you didn't have cattle, that would not have happened. They didn't go to the freezer and get out some steaks or anything and run down to the store and get some steaks or something like that. So let's think about a few things. If the patriarchs were purely cattlemen and herdsmen, why is it that we find Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob living very close to cities? If you look at where they lived, they always lived close to cities. So why did they do that? Why do they live close to cities? Think about, let's go to Genesis chapter 12 and look at verse 14. Genesis chapter 12, verse 14. So it was, when Abram came into Egypt, that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. They saw that she was very beautiful. And the princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. Now, we're familiar with that, but it's interesting what we find there. If they saw Sarah, she was very fair. And one of the things we have to remember about the Egyptians is this, that the Egyptians had contempt for herders and breeders of cattle. So if they were herders and breeders of cattle, wouldn't they have detested these individuals? And was Abraham the only one who came down to Egypt, you know, to escape the famine? Why should the princes of Pharaoh pay any attention to Abraham's wife Sarah? Why would they ever cross paths? Egypt's a big place. Why would they ever see one another? If he's just a shepherd and herder of flocks, which they detest, why would they have any dealings with Abraham is something we have to ask. And if no dealings with him, how would they ever have come into contact with Sarah? So they went to Egypt because of the famine. Lots of other people went down to Egypt. How did they come into contact with each other? What brought them together? Doesn't really seem logical as you step back and think about it. Let's go to chapter 14 of Genesis and look at verse 14. Chapter 14, verse 14. So this is in the incident that where Lot is taken captive by the four kings from over in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They've come over and looted and pillaged and taken people as slaves, and they're headed back home. Chapter 14, verse 14 says, "Now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan." All right, so Abraham has, or Abram here, has 318 men that are in his service. That's a lot of men. A lot of men. So how many armies was he going to out to oppose with his 318 men? It talks about four armies that he's going to have to face. It's soon after the flood, so Abraham had a large force for the time, with the population slowly increasing. But 318 men, this close to the flood, it was a sizable army. A sizable army. A question we might ask is this: why did Abraham need 318 trained fighting men? Why did he need 318 trained fighting men? If he's a shepherd, that seems to be rather excessive. Do you need 318 trained fighting men to protect your sheep and goats and cattle? Maybe. But seems unlikely. So why might he have needed that many men? Let's go to Genesis chapter 20 and look at verse 1. Genesis chapter 20, verse 1. It says here, "And Abraham journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and stayed in Gerar." So, if you look at your maps, and this is the ocean is out here, the Mediterranean Sea. And if you look at the map, looking it on I'm looking at it, and the Mediterranean Sea is out to your left. Now, where are Shur and Gerar? And Kadesh and Shur and Gerar. If you look at down at the bottom, there's a fairly dark, toward the bottom, there's a fairly dark line, and it says the way to Shur. The way to Shur. And it doesn't end. Kadesh Barnea is, if you look at it, it's light. A light blue there, and there's a dot there. That's Kadesh Barnea. And he lives in between Shur and Kadesh Barnea. And then Gerar is up further north. Gerar is up at another dot. You'll see the way to the land of the Philistines. And there's a dot there, and that is Gerar. Sorry, this isn't bright, but that's the way it was in the Macmillan Bible Atlas. So Gerar's up at this other dot, and his actual permanent residence is down here between Kadesh Barnea and Shur. But he goes up to Gerar. And so the permanent place that he lives is between Kadesh and Shur, and he had a temporary establishment in Gerar. And what advantage was there in Gerar that was not available to him in Kadesh and Shur? Does anybody know what the advantage was in going up to Gerar? Why did Isaac go to Gerar? Does anybody remember that? Because it was so dry, and the wells had all dried up, and he went to Gerar, moving into the land of the Philistines, and he was able to find water there. So, and the chief advantage, what's the chief advantage of Gerar over Beersheba and the area between Kadesh and Shur? What's it like? Does anybody know geographically what's it like in Beersheba, Kadesh, and Shur? Anybody know? Yes. Desert. Yeah, you've got rabbits there that carry canteens. It's very dry. All right? So if you're a herder of sheep and goats and cattle, what are you going to need in order to keep that going? You're going to need water. And there's more water up by Gerar than there is down in the desert. All right? But the question you might ask is, he might move up there temporarily, but what do you have a permanent residence down here in the burning sands of southern Israel? So the area between, as was said, it's desert, it's a complete wilderness. And the question is, what would a shepherd or cattleman be doing in an area that is complete wilderness? It says that's where He chose to establish himself, and there's no reason a shepherd would want to be in that area. So why was he there? Genesis chapter 23. We're looking at the questions, and then we'll answer the questions here shortly. Genesis chapter 23. It speaks of Sarah dying, let's begin in verse 1. Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. So Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. Then Abraham stood up from before his dead and spoke to the sons of Heth. So these were Hittites. He spoke to the Hittites, saying, I am a foreigner and a visitor among you. Give me property for a burial place among you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And the sons of Heth answered Abraham, saying, Hear us, my lord. You are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our burial places. None of us will withhold from you his burial place, that you may bury your dead. So Sarah dies, and Abraham makes this plea to the Hittites. And why do they call him a mighty prince among us? That would seem unusual to refer to Abraham as a mighty prince when he owns no property and he's not a full member of the community. It seems an unusual degree of respect if he were merely a shepherd and cattleman. They had a lot of respect for him. Why? Sixth thing to think about here is something else might be noted between Abraham and Hebron. In Genesis 14, the incident where Lot is taken captive, one of the men of Sodom escaped and told him of what had happened. In Genesis chapter 14, verse 13, let's look at Genesis chapter 14, verse 13. It says, Then one who had escaped came and told Abram, the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and a brother of Aner, and they were allies with Abram. So here, Abram not only has 318 trained fighting men, but he also has allies. He dwelt by the terebinth tree of Mamre. And what's the significance of dwelling by such a that particular tree? What area of the town was he dwelling in? Well, he was dwelling by the religious center, the holy place of the area. So you may say, wait a minute, I thought Abram worshipped God. He did. And there's more to that story, which we're not going to get into today. But as I said, it speaks of Abraham's allies. And what does a shepherd need with allies? What does a shepherd need with allies? And when he goes after Lot, these allies go with him. And what explains this intimate relationship between Abraham and these men? Why does he have this close relationship with these men and they're his allies? Let's go to Genesis chapter 46. Genesis chapter 46, verse 34. Genesis 46, verse 34. So they've discovered that Joseph is the second in command in Egypt. And Joseph invites them to move down to Egypt. And Joseph wants them to be able to move close to him in the land of Goshen. And he knows that when his father comes down and his family comes down, that he's going to be questioned by the Pharaoh. And so with that in mind, look at what it says here in verse 34. He says, let's start in verse 33. So it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, What is your occupation? What's your occupation? Verse 34. Now, he says, Pharaoh's going to ask you this. You don't think that Jacob knew what his occupation was? I mean, I would think so. You know, he's an old man at this point, so he must know what he was doing. So verse 34, your servant's occupation has been with livestock. So that you shall say, your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. So he's telling him, hey, look, he's going to ask you about this. You need to tell him that we are shepherds. And you've been a shepherd from your youth, which he had been. It's true. It's a true statement. But if he were just asked flat out, he would have given a different answer. So Joseph has to prompt him, look, don't give the standard answer. Give this answer, which is true. We do have flocks. We do have herds. But that's not our primary occupation. So the reason that they, if they were only shepherds and herders and feeders of livestock, if that was their main occupation, he probably would have said that, but he had to be prompted. And Joseph said, you need to tell him this because we want this outcome so we can live in the land of Goshen. And so what else were they involved in besides animal husbandry? We get a clue in another location, and this is pertaining to Jacob. We get a clue in the confrontation between Hamor, king of Shechem, and Jacob. After Jacob returned from Haran, his daughter Dinah was taken advantage of by Shechem, the prince of Shechem. And Shechem is up, if you go north here, Shechem's up further north here, north and a little bit west of the Dead Sea. That's the blue big lake there. And it's a little bit north of there, and it is an important place here. In fact, I have to look carefully at this. If you look at the way of the plain, that's where Shechem is. So that's because there's a road that goes down from there, and it's important, as we'll see. So Hamor wants to so Dinah was taken advantage of, and they're trying to straighten things out here. So Hamor wants to regularize the relationship. The wrong was on the part of his son, and his son had done the right thing. He wanted to make the thing legitimate, and he's trying to offer every possible inducement for Jacob and to Jacob that he would forget the offense and agree to the marriage between the two children. So he's being very generous in what he offers. Let's look at chapter 34 and verse 8 and see what he does offer. Genesis chapter 34, verse 8. Genesis 34, verse 8. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as wife. Verse 9. And make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it. Dwell and trade in it. And acquire possessions for yourselves. Shechem was on the trade route. And you needed permission to trade. And he was offering him as an inducement to allow Dinah to marry his son. You can live here, you can marry, and you guys have the freedom to trade. Because that was important to Jacob and his family. So, what this gives us an indication of is that there's a strong connection between the patriarchs and being involved with trade. As you look on this map, you find all these lines, these roads. And what these roads were major avenues through the land of Palestine and their trade routes. It's not on this map, but if you go up to the top here and you see at the top where it says to Katna and to Tadmor, all of out to the east, you're going across into the Fertile Crescent and down to Babylon. And there was trade going between Egypt and Babylon and those areas there in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley all the time. So people would come from the east. People would come from the east and they would come down these roads to Egypt and they would come back. And one of the major routes running from Damascus through Hatzor and Megiddo through the coastal plain and on into Egypt was called the Way of the Sea. And if you look on the left side of your map, you'll see something called the Via Maris. That is the Way of the Sea. That's just a different language, but it means Way of the Sea. And that was a major trade route. So they would come down and they would come across and they would go down to Egypt going along the sea. You also had over to a secondary route over to the right. You have a road called the King's Highway. It's over just to the east of what would be the Dead Sea. The King's Highway was a very thoroughly, regularly used route, and it would go all the way down to the Gulf of Aqaba there where there were shipping, and they could ship their products, and there was also a section that went off to the east toward Egypt. So trade was all important. And if you look at the history of Israel, when Israel prospered, and it especially prospered during the time of David and Solomon, why did it prosper? It prospered because Israel controlled the trade routes. And whenever Israel controlled the trade routes, they prospered. When they lost control of the trade routes, they had great difficulties. So the trade routes were crucial. There's also a road that's a highway that's called the Ridge Route. And Abraham and his family are continually associated with the towns along this route. All of his movements, with the exception of going to Gerar, are associated with this particular route. And as is the case with Jacob, it dovetails with the use of this route for reasons of trade. Not just the route itself. So you have down through the middle, going through Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, you can see there, if you look at the top of the Dead Sea and just off to the left, you will see in very faded print, Jerusalem. And there's a dot there, which represents Jerusalem. And so there's a ridge route that comes down through Jerusalem and on down the way of Ephrah and on down to the way of Shur. And that was the route that they were would primarily stay along. And you can see that where was Abraham's home? His permanent residence? It's in Kadesh Barnea, which is where? It's right there at that trade route. That's why he lived in the burning sands near Beersheba, and because it was close to trade. So where is it that Abraham first comes and settles? Well, that's in Shechem. And it has direct connections to the Via Maris and by way of a wadi across the Jordan to the King's Highway. So he had access to those two major trade routes. And remember when Jacob came back from Haran, he came down off the King's Highway and came up to Shechem. And that's where his daughter got into trouble. And as you look at the patriarchs, they were traders, but they weren't a nation and they didn't have great power. And so they really couldn't access the major trade routes. So they took advantage of the secondary routes, that gave them good access to traders coming down those routes. So people would come down and they didn't have all as good of access as they might have had, but they were able to have good access to where they could make a good living. So in essence, what you would look at them as in the trade system, they were distributors. They were distributors. And where does the distributor have to be? Well, he has to be where the caravans go by, and Shechem is ideally situated for that. As you think about where Abraham dwelt, he dwelt between Bethel and Ai. Now, where's Bethel and Ai? If you look at Jericho, that's north and west of the Dead Sea. There's a dot there, and it says Way of the Jordan. And so Ai is close to Jericho, and Bethel's in that area as well. And you can see these trade routes are passing right by where he lived in order that he could make trade. A third place that he locates frequently is Salem, the city, what we know as the city of Jerusalem. He's familiar with it and Melchizedek, but it's not a good trading spot. It's not so good. But if you go down to Hebron, it's located at the junction of various routes that are good for trade. And Hebron is, if you go down, you'll see it's at the way of Ephraim. So it's about straight west of the Dead Sea. You've got Ziph, you've got En Gedi, and if you go further to your left there, you come to Hebron and then on to Lachish. But you can see these highways running through there, secondary routes, but still well-traveled, where you would come into contact with a lot of traders. And another location where Abraham dwelled was Beersheba, located at the foot of the hill country and beginning of the flat area, a vital connection between the ridge route and the way to Egypt and the way of the Red Sea. And interesting that Abraham and Isaac, chose to locate themselves there because it was a good place for trading. So let's go back and look at some puzzling things if we viewed the patriarchs only as husband and cattlemen as we come to a close. So we talked of them living near cities. Near cities, not just any cities, but cities that are major trading junctions. Every time we find Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob associated with a city, it is associated with various trading routes. This idea that they were traders explains why the princes of Pharaoh would have had reason to notice Sarah. If Abraham was involved in trade, this would bring him into contact with people on a higher level than if he were a shepherd alone. Because let's face it, the Pharaoh is not going to ride out and meet sheep herders or raisers of cattle or goats. You know, you kind of smell like cattle and goats. We really aren't going to be much interested in that. But if you're traders, you're going to interact with them because you're bringing goods and exchanging goods and money and all of this kind of thing. So in the course of trading, the Pharaohs noticed, whoa, look at this lady. She is quite beautiful. And Abraham was not willing to say, excuse me, this is my wife, hands off. He was not willing to do that, so he lied. And it all backfired on him. So it eventually worked out, but he should have just been honest from the get-go. But this is the reason why Sarah would have come into contact with the Pharaoh and his princes. Also, and he may not have come into contact with Pharaoh first off. He may have come back into contact with some of the princes. They engage in trading, and these fellows being fellows, they notice that she is an attractive woman and say, hey, you know, this guy that's trading over here, he has a beautiful woman with him. And that led to problems. Also, being a trader would explain why he had so many armed servants. As a trader, he would be carrying valuable goods and would need to protect them from brigands. So he had armed troops that had been trained, and they were there, and they helped to defend the caravans or his goods in order that he could carry on trading with the caravans. And it would also, being a trader, would explain what he was doing in the desolate wilderness area between Kadesh and Shur. His base camp at Gerar makes sense because there you find water and forage for his animals. But his primary area of focus between Kadesh and Shur makes sense because trade routes that go down to Egypt went nearby. So it was a place for him to dwell and to carry on trading. So he was using some entrepreneurial ingenuity. If you're willing to go out a little further into the desert, you're able to engage the traders and maybe find a more lucrative situation. Really, if you're going to raise cattle and goats and sheep and all of that, you're not going to go to a desolate area. doesn't make sense. So their being traitors also explains why Joseph had to prepare his father on what to say to Pharaoh. Because if Pharaoh had asked him, what would he have said? We're traitors! And he would have not placed him in Goshen. But because they were traitors, he said, we're herdsmen and cattlemen and all of that, they put them in Goshen. So Joseph had told them, don't say anything about your mercantile activity, just talk about your animal husbandry. And, you know, from Jacob's story, you know that Jacob was good at animal husbandry because he had done certain things in order to produce certain strains of cattle. And so he put up the rods and all of that kind of thing and got certain results from that. When Pharaoh hears of there being shepherds and herders, he's too polite to go, yuck, but he says, I'll put you in Goshen. So that's what they wanted, and that's what they got. A great place to be, also close to Joseph, which is what he wanted. So were the patriarchs shepherds? Yes, they were. But what was their primary job, their primary occupation? That was the occupation of being traitors. So hopefully that proves helpful to you. And hopefully you found it beneficial. It answers some questions. So at future parties and things like that, when people say, well, what was the job of the patriarchs? You can just say, hey, it looks like they were shepherds, but let me tell you why they were actually traitors. So anyway, hopefully you found that beneficial, and thanks for your attention.